Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachadi Yamuna Tira Banachadi Jai Hurad Humadava Kunjabi Hadi Jai Hurad Humadava Kunjabi Hadi Gopijana Balava Giribaru Dadi Gopijana Balava Giribaru Dadi Yashoda Dandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Dandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tera Panachari Yamuna Tera Panachari Jai Hurad Amadava Kunyabihari Jai Hur Radha Madhava Kunyabihari Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravitakacharya All Siddhata Siddhashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Charanada Bhaktivananda Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anata Goti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Hidas Thakur Ki Jai Hrim Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Parabha Nityananda Siddhveda Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai Shishi Radha Krishna Gopita Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunavai Ki Jai Shrimati Lassi Devi Gajai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Gajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bom. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. So Om Magana Timiranda Shagaran Jina Shilakaya Chakshura Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Maha, I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who has so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, we will go ahead to the Bhagavad Gita again. And we are continuing our reading of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Verse 7 is the next verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Let me just set this up. Alrighty. So, we'll start reciting the Sanskrit. Give me one second. So everyone can see it. This is when Arjuna begins to surrender to Krishna. Karpanya dosho bhagatasvabhava Vichami tvam dharma samudha chaitaha Yatshaya shanishchitam bruhitanme Shishasteham sharimam tvam prapannam. So Karpanya of miserliness, dosha by the weakness, upahata, being afflicted, swabhava, characteristics, prachami, I am asking, chwam, unto you, dharma, religion, samuda, bewildered, chetaha, in heart, yat, what, shreya, all good, shat, may be, nishyatam, confidentially, bruhi, tell, tat, that, may, unto me, shusha, disciple, te, your, aham, I am, shadi, just instruct, ma, me, tuam, unto you, prapanam, surrendered. Translation, now I am confused about my duty and I've lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So one thing about this verse you notice, unto you in heart, confidentially, nishyutam, confidentially. So in other words, just like the Nectar of Instruction tells us that dadati pratigirnati guyam akyati prichati bhunkte bhojite chaiva, that one should reveal the mind and hear in confidence. So Arjuna is doing this very confidentially. That means it's just between him and Krishna. Of course, I guess it's not so confidential now because we're all reading about it. But at least in the battlefield, it was between him and Krishna. And of course, Sanjaya knew about it. Sanjaya was relating it to Dhritarashtra. So he's just, this is a very emotional moment for Arjuna. And generally, it takes emotional moments, trauma, some change in one's life, some perplexity, to, let's say, start one or to give one the impetus or to kick one enough so that one actually just says, hold on, it's time to surrender to Krishna. So this happens sometimes. Yeah. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, by nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step there is perplexity, and therefore it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. Let me unpack that sentence. So in other words, it's not that the spiritual master just gives you information about the purpose of life, and information about the philosophy, that's called sambandha gyan. But he gives you abhideya gyan, how to practically execute and achieve your goal of spiritual life. And so he does that understanding not only theoretically the philosophy and the practice of the practices of the philosophy, but also understanding your own psychophysical nature. In other words, the spiritual master gives instruction according to the individual, this individualized instruction, because everybody has a certain type of nature. Everyone is in a certain type of maya. Just like you have, there used to be an ice cream store, I'm not sure if it's still in existence, called Baskin Robbins, which had so many different varieties of ice cream. So there's many different varieties of maya. In fact, how do you ascertain all the different varieties of maya? You get the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and you do all these different permutations with them in different degrees, and, you know, 3 × 3 × 3 × 3 to the whatever's power. Of course, ultimately, you do get to 8,400,000, and then you even get more than that. So there's practically infinite varieties, so the spiritual master's guidance is required. One man's food is another one's poison. So guidance has to be there. Give proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. Not just information, but jnana, vijnana, knowledge and realization. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. No one wants fire, and yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. I guess I got to unpack that one. Not that he necessarily knows how to fix a car, not that he knows atomic physics or anything like that, but when you know the purpose of everything. Prabhupada gave the example that if you have a car, you know how to use the car to go from one place to another. In fact, you know the purpose of the car, but you may not know how the engine works. One should not therefore remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of this verse. So I think we need to unpack a few things here. First of all, the spiritual master has to be in disciplic succession. Four basic disciplic successions, as we've heard many times before. The Brahma Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Kumara Sampradaya, and Lakshmi Sampradaya. And the spiritual master, Samit Pani Shrochiam Brahmanishtam, has to be a servant of his spiritual master, not stepping over the head of his spiritual master. He must have heard nicely from the spiritual master and be able to apply the knowledge in his own life, not falling down, not deviating from the standards of Krishna consciousness. So we all need a guide like that. We were speaking this morning about pramana, how do you know what you know? Of course, that's called epistemology in Western terminology. How do you know what you know? So we accept what's called the descending process. If we want to know something, we go to Krishna, who is the perfect source of knowledge. Other knowledge may be and is relative knowledge. So, who is the man in material perplexities? It is he who does not understand the problems of life. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, means the great forest Upanishad, is a translation. Actually, Upanishad means to come closer and come closer to the spiritual master. 3.8.10, the perplexed man is described as follows. Yovaitat aksharam garg He is a miserly man who does not solve the problems of life as a human and who thus quits this world like the cats and dogs without understanding the science of self-realization. Again, there's this topic which Srila Prabhupada would give many times and speak about many times. Cats and dogs, what is that? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And someone who simply engages in that is simply acting like a cat, dog, tiger, you know, whatever other animal you have. Those four animalistic propensities. And what differentiates us? Very little. It just, you know, the way we do those things, you know, it's different. But the activity itself, in essence, is the same. This human form of life is a most valuable asset for the living entity who can utilize it for solving the problems of life. Therefore, one who does not utilize this opportunity properly is a miser. On the other hand, there is the Brahman, or he, who is intelligent enough to utilize this body to solve all the problems of life. Yaitad aksharam gargi vidva smal kat praiti sa brahmanaha. The kripanas, or miserly persons, waste their time in being overly affectionate for family, society, country, etc., in the material conception of life. One is often attached to family life, namely to wife, children, and other members, on the basis of skin disease. In other words, because someone is physically related with me, genetically related with me, I consider them more important. This is the whole point we were bringing out in the beginning of this Bhagavad Gita recitation or reading, where Arjuna keeps using the term swajana, you know, my people. You know, the term is used quite a few times in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The kripana thinks that he is able to protect his family members from death, or the kripana thinks that his family or society can save him from the verge of death. Such family attachment can be found even in the lower animals who take care of children also. Being intelligent, That doesn't mean that people shouldn't have families. It just means that people should see things in the right perspective. That ultimately, we're all the same family. We're all brothers and sisters, and that includes all species of life. Sarva yonishu kontiya murtiya sambhavantiya ambija pradapita, as Krishna says. Being intelligent, Arjuna could understand that his affection for family members and his wish to protect them from death were the causes of his perplexities. Although he could understand that his duty to fight was awaiting him, still, on account of miserly weakness, he could not discharge the duties. He is therefore asking Lord Krishna, the Supreme Spiritual Master, to make a definite solution. He offers himself to Krishna as a disciple. He wants to stop friendly talks. Talks between the master and disciple are serious, and now Arjuna wants to talk very seriously before the recognized spiritual master. Krishna is therefore the original spiritual master of the science of Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna is the first disciple for understanding the Gita. How Arjuna understands the Bhagavad Gita is stated in the Gita itself. And yet foolish mundane scholars explain that one need not submit to Krishna as a person, but to the unborn within Krishna. That's, of course, reference to Dr. Radhakrishna's commentary on the Gita. There is no difference between Krishna's within and without, and one who has no sense of this understanding is the greatest fool in trying to understand Bhagavad Gita. Tadviganartum sa gurumeva abhigachet, the Vedic literatures say. If one actually wants to understand or realize spiritual knowledge, one has to approach a spiritual master. And do what? Submit pani, shrotriyam, brahmanishtam. Serve nicely like that. And that's why I approached Prabhupada. Before my becoming in contact with Prabhupada, actually I was simply speculating about what was spiritual, what was not spiritual. But as soon as I came in contact with Prabhupada and followed his directions, immediately there was spiritual advancement. So that was my experience. So text 8. So Arjuna is now surrendering to Krishna. Previously, the relationship was friends. As we previously mentioned, there are different relationships that one may have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One could be a passive person who adores the Lord. One could be a friend of the Lord. One could be a servant of the Lord. One can be a mother, a father, parental a relationship with the Lord, or one can have a conjugal relationship with the Lord. So Arjuna's eternal relationship is Sakya Ras, which means he's his buddy. So now he's putting aside that eternal relationship to accept Krishna like a father, which is interesting. Father, spiritual master is the spiritual father. Even though they're friends, he's actually putting that aside, and you'll see how he puts that aside. Nahi prapashyami mama apanudyad yachoktam uccho shananam indriyanam avapyubhumau vasa patnam riddam vajam suranam apichari pacham. Prapashyami, I see, mama, my, apanudyat, can drive away yet that which shokam, lamentation, uchoshanam, drying up, indriyanam, of the senses, of apya, achieving, bhumau, and the earth, asapatnam, without rival, ridam, prosperous, rajam, kingdom, suranam, of the demigods, api, even, cha, also, adipatyam, supremacy. Translation, I can find no means to drive away this grief, which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like that of the demigods in heaven. So, Prabhupada explains, although Arjuna was putting forth so many arguments based on knowledge of the principles of religion and moral codes, it appears that he was unable to solve his real problem without the help of the spiritual master, Lord Sri Krishna. He could understand that his so-called knowledge was useless in driving away his problems, which were drying up his whole existence, and it was impossible for him to solve such perplexities without the help of a spiritual master like Lord Krishna. academic knowledge, scholarship, high position, etc., are all useless in solving the problems of life. Help can be given only by a spiritual master like Krishna. Therefore, the conclusion is that a spiritual master who is 100% Krishna conscious is the bona fide spiritual master, for he can solve the problems of life. Lord Chaitanya said that one who is a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, regardless of his social position, is the real spiritual master. Kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra, kene nai, ye Krishna tattva vita, se guru hoy. It does not matter whether a person is a vipra, learned scholar in Vedic wisdom, or is born in the lower family, or is in the renounced order of life, if he is master in the science of Krishna, he is the perfect and bona fide spiritual master. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila, 8th chapter, 128. So without being a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, no one is a bona fide spiritual master. It is also said in the Vedic literature. Satkarma nipano vipro mantra tantra visharadaha Vaishnavo guror nashat Vaishnava shapacho guruhu. A scholarly Brahmin, expert in all subjects of Vedic knowledge, is unfit to become a spiritual master without being a Vaishnava or expert in the science of Krishna consciousness. But a person born in a family of a lower caste can become a spiritual master if he is a Vaishnava or Krishna conscious. That's from the Padma Purana. The problems of material existence, birth, old age, disease, and death cannot be counteracted by accumulation of wealth and economic development. In many parts of the world, there are states which are replete with all facilities of life, which are full of wealth and economically developed, yet the problems of material existence are still present. They are seeking peace in different ways, but they can achieve real happiness only if they consult Krishna or the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which constitute the science of Krishna through the bona fide representative of Krishna, the man in Krishna consciousness or woman in Krishna consciousness. If economic development and material comforts could drive away one's lamentations for family, social, national, international inebrities, then Arjuna would not have said that even an unrivaled kingdom on earth or supremacy like that of the demigods and the heavenly planets would be able to drive away his lamentations. He sought, therefore, refuge in Krishna consciousness, and that is the right path for peace and harmony. Economic development or supremacy over the world can be finished at any moment by the cataclysms of material nature. Even elevation to a higher planetary situation, as men are now seeking on the moon planet, can also be finished at one stroke. The Bhagavad Gita confirms this. Shine punye marcha lokam vichanti. Probably gives the translation. When the results of pious activities are finished, one falls down again from the peak of happiness to the lowest status of life. Many politicians of the world have fallen down in that way. Such downfalls only constitute more causes for lamentation. So let me unpack that for a second for those of you who don't know about karma. That throughout life in this world, if you are not engaged in spiritual life, you are accumulating karma. Karma, in this particular sense, means the reactions to your activities. The word karma really means work, but in this particular context, it means reactions to anything you do in this world. Everything you do has karma, if you're not a spiritualist. So anything, good or bad, let's say I'm very good, and I help a lot of old ladies cross streets. I mean, nowadays nobody's crossing the streets anymore, but let's say I do some really good stuff, materially good stuff. I get all this nice karma. I help people, so much nice karma. And that nice karma will get me a very nice position in the next life, maybe in a higher planet, maybe as a rich person, maybe I'll be born in a very rich family. So many types of, worldly goods or worldly positions may be achieved by someone who has good karma. Or let's say I have bad karma. Then based on that, I may have to take birth in a very unfortunate circumstances or in a subhuman species or whatever, if I do a lot of bad things in this life. So it's good karma and bad karma. However, the interesting thing is it's not exactly like money, that good negates bad or bad negates good. You know, with money, if you have a lot of money, you can pay your debts off. But with karma, if you have a lot of good karma, you can't pay off your bad karmic debts. And I'll tell you one story that illustrates that. Once upon a time, there was a king. His name was Nriga. And he had a lot of good karma. He used to give away so many cows and charity to different brahmanas. Now, one time, by accident, he gave away the same cow twice. In other words, one of the cows wandered back and he gave it away again. And the brahmanas were real upset, so he sort of got a karmic reaction for that. And so it came time for him to leave his body. Da-da-da. You know, the moment of truth, that was your life. And so when he left his body, he was asked, you got a lot of good karma, you got a lot of bad, you got a little bit of bad karma, okay, not a lot of bad karma, got a little bit of bad karma, what do you want first? So he was thinking, better take the bad karma first. Why was he thinking like that? I mean, just like, an example I often use is that when I was young and someone would give me they have these cookies called the Oreo cookies. I don't know if anyone's heard of Oreo cookies, but anyway, they were like cream-filled cookies. And so there's cream in the middle. So what I would do is I'd eat around the outside first, and then I got the nectar inside. Or when I had a sandwich, I would eat the crust. That means, you know, that hard stuff on the outside of the bread, then I get the nectar, the inside. So he wanted the bad stuff first so he could really enjoy like anything, because it was said that he had so much good karma that it was almost unlimited. So he chose, you know, let me take the bad karma first. So, of course, that proves that good doesn't negate bad or bad doesn't negate good. So anyway, so he became a lizard in a well. That was his bad karma. However, shortly after he became a lizard, he was saved by Krishna. That was his good karma. So, however, here's another point. If you engage in Krishna karma, it means activities for Krishna, then you get rid of all the bad and the good karma. What's wrong with good karma? It entangles you in this world. I'll give you an example. Let's say I help someone tremendously, or then I have to take birth again, so in the next life, they can help me. So, you know, if I give some money and charity to the proper person, then I have to take birth, if he hasn't given it back to me in this lifetime, to get it back. So it's not a very good proposal. Either good karma or bad karma. And neither one gives you real happiness. In fact, even by getting material happiness, one gets put into more anxiety. Because in one sense, the more you have, the more you're worried about protecting it. Just like in America. America is a very litigious country. Litigious means people sue each other for basically very small reasons. And so people who want to sue other people are looking for something called deep pockets. So if you don't have any money, nobody's going to sue you. You have nothing to worry, nothing to lose. And no anxiety. I mean, there's that one example of this great sage, the story is there in the Bhagavatam, that he was supposed to live as long as, let's say, as many days of Lord Brahma as he had hairs on his body, and that's trillions, quadrillions, almost unlimited years. And he didn't take any endeavor, make any endeavor to acquire anything, not even to build a house. As he said, life was very short, and he was never in anxiety, and he was in ecstasy. And it's also interesting, when they do these studies, these international studies of where people are the happiest in the world, sometimes you get these countries, third world countries, where people are really poor and they turn out happier. I don't know how they measure happiness, but anyway, they turn out by the scientists, the anthropologists, measures of happiness as more happy than people in the United States in general, you know, taking a cross section. So, money doesn't make you happy, wealth doesn't make you happy, Krishna makes you happy because the happiness is within. Yatma supersedite savai pum samparadama yata bhakti ahutsaje hoitukiya pratyata yatma supersedite. Because what we're actually looking for is loving relationships. I mean, a very deep, unlimited loving relationship which we can have with Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So, let's continue. Therefore, if we want to curb lamentation for good, then we have to take shelter of Krishna, as Arjuna is seeking to do. So Arjuna asks Krishna to solve his problem definitely, and that is the way of Krishna consciousness. Help. And actually, one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's famous verse, Shikshashtika verses, is in that line too. Ai nanda tanuja kinkaram patitamam vishame bhavam buddha kripya tava pada pankaja stitta duli sadrasam vichintaya. And that verse states, O Krishna, and Krishna is referred to as O son of Nanda Maharaj, tanuja kinkaram, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I've fallen down into this, the literal translation is horrible ocean of birth and death, where you can't keep anything. You know, you just keep losing things. I mean, Arjuna is specifically bewildered here, but we may not be specifically bewildered by our present circumstances, but if we actually look at the world, look at our life as a totality, and see what's there in the future, because when you're young, it's hard to look in the future. I remember joining the Krishna Consciousness Movement. I was like 20, 21 years old. I thought, never get old. Well, those old people, you know. And also I thought Prabhupada would never leave this world. And he did. So I didn't really think about the time factor. You don't really think about the time factor, at least most people, when you're young. But that's life. Those are the facts of life, the time factor. It's coming to get you. So anyway, let's read the next verse. And now Sanjaya is speaking. Sanjaya vacha evam muktva richikesham gudakesha parantapa na yotcha iti govindam muktva tuchnim vavuvaha. Sanjaya vacha. Sanjaya said, evam thus, muktva speaking, richikesham unto Krishna, the master of the senses, gudakesha, Arjuna, the master of curbing ignorance. Also means conqueror over sleep, which we mentioned previously. Parantapa. Chastiser of the enemies, na yotsye, I shall not fight, iti thus, govindam unto Krishna, the giver of pleasure to the senses, uktva saying, tushnim silent, bhuva became hot, certainly. Translation, Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of the enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. And this is where Arjuna ends up getting chastised. So purport, Dhritarashtra must have been very glad to understand that Arjuna was not going to fight and was instead leaving the battlefield for the begging profession. But Sanjaya disappointed him again in relating that Arjuna was competent to kill his enemies, Parantapa. Although Arjuna was for the time being overwhelmed with false grief due to family affection, he surrendered unto Krishna, the supreme spiritual master, as a disciple. This indicated that he would soon be free from the false lamentation resulting from family affection and would be enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization of Krishna consciousness and would then surely fight. Thus, Dhritarashtra's joy would be frustrated since Arjuna would be enlightened by Krishna and would fight to the end. Now, sometimes in the progress of spiritual life, we may get discouraged for one reason or other and say, it's too much. Oh, my God. And then, you know, we need a little pep talk. Just like in sporting activity, sometimes there is a necessity of a pep talk, reminding one of one's position. And when one is reminded of one's position, then one becomes enlivened. And that reminds me of the Ramayana. a story about Hanuman. Hanuman actually forgot that he was like extremely powerful son of the wind, because the sages had cursed Hanuman because he was a little tricky when he was a kid. And he was cursed to forget his powers until someone reminded him. So, fast forward, Hanuman and all the other peoples, like Jambavan people, monkeys, whatever, were at the edge of the ocean, and no one could cross the ocean to find Sita Devi, except for Hanuman, but Hanuman had forgotten his powers. So Jambavan reminded Hanuman, actually the monkeys were ready to commit suicide, because they couldn't figure out how to cross the ocean. They previously been informed where Sita Devi was by Sampati, who was Jataya's brother. And they just didn't know what to do. But then Jambavan said to Hanuman, "You have all these powers." And Hanuman just like, da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. You know, he just all of a sudden like expanded himself gigantically and was able to jump and fly to Lanka to find Sita Devi. So sometimes we need to be reminded about who we are. Your spirit soul, you're eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. You really have nothing to do with this world. You're identifying with this world just like you may identify with an avatar in a video game. You may think it's you. You know, the Matrix example, which I use all the time. So it's not you. It's not you. You are something different. And so, you know, as soon as we're reminded, Jai, I have all these powers. And definitely you have all these amazing powers as a spiritual living entity. You'd be amazed at the power of the soul, which is more brilliant than the sun. Can you imagine that? Your soul is more brilliant, more powerful than the sunshine. But you have to be reminded about it. Like Hanuman was reminded. And then you can do amazing things. And of course, be happy, full of bliss. That is, realize your eternal nature and have full knowledge. So, next verse. Kamavacha Rishikesha Prahasannibabharata Saniyorubiyo Madhye Vishidhantamidambachaha. Come unto him, Uvacha said, Rishikesha, the master of the senses, Krishna. Prahasan, smiling Niva, like that. Bharata, O Dhritarashtra, descendant of Bharata, Senyo of the armies, Vyo of both parties, Madhye, between Vishidantam, unto the lamenting one, Idam, the following Vachaha words. Translation. O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. And Prabhupada says, the talk was going on between intimate friends, namely the Rishikesha and Gudakesha. That means Rishikesha means the proprietor of the senses, Krishna. Gudakesha is the person who is able to conquer sleep. That's Arjuna. Different names. And actually in the Gita you'll find Krishna referred to in different, using different nomenclature, like Govinda, Rishikesha, Bhagawan. As friends, both of them were on the same level. But one of them voluntarily became the student of the other. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. So, in other words, when you see someone with superior spiritual knowledge, then you accept them as a teacher, even if socially they're equal, or even if socially they're less than you socially, which is really interesting. You become a disciple of someone who is less than you socially. And I'll give you an example of that. There's actually two examples. First of all, Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya had a guru who was an impersonalist, who didn't accept that the personal aspect of the Lord was the topmost aspect. And eventually, Madhvacharya became the guru of his guru when his guru surrendered. Same thing happened with Sripad Ramanujacharya. In fact, Ramanujacharya's guru, when he was very young, was so upset with him one time, he did make an arrangement to have other disciples kill Ramanujacharya, because Ramanujacharya was so determined to prove that God was a person. And so they were going to kill him and take a bath in the Ganges to get rid of the sinful reaction, which actually would not have worked at that particular juncture. They were unsuccessful for one reason or other. But eventually, this devotee, or this person, surrendered to Rabindranacharya and became one of his chief disciples. So can you imagine the guru surrendering to the disciple and accepting the disciple as guru? Or in the case of Lord Kapiladeva, he became the guru of his mother. And generally the mother is the natural guru in the family. Mother and father are natural gurus. But he became a natural guru because he had superior knowledge. Of course, he was incarnation of Krishna. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. It's kind of interesting. Krishna was smiling to see he's changed his whole mentality. As the Lord of all, he is always in the superior position as the master of everyone. And yet the Lord agrees to be a friend, a son, or a lover for a devotee who wants him in such a role. But when he was accepted as the master, he had once assumed the role and talked with the disciple like the master with gravity as it is required. It appears that the talk between the master and disciple was openly exchanged in the presence of both armies, so that all were benefited. So the talks of Bhagavad Gita are not for any particular person, society, or community, but they are for all, and friends or enemies are equally entitled to hear them. It's interesting. Text 11. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Shochanan Vasochas Twam Pragyavanam Shabashashe Gatasunagatasums Cha Nanu Shochanti Pandit Ha. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of God, had said, Ashochan, not worthy of lamentation, Anvashochaha, you are lamenting, Twam to you, Pragyavadan, learned talks, Cha also, Vashase, speaking, Gata, lost, Asun, life, Agata, not past, Asun, life, Cha also, not, never, Anushochanti, lament, Panditaha, the learned. The Supreme Personality of God had said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Now, Srila Prabhupada actually informed us this is actually a preaching technique. First of all, you have to convince people that they don't know. That's the first step to achieving wisdom. Just like, let's refer a little bit to ancient Greece. It was understood that Socrates, some of you may know who Socrates is or was the most wise person in Athens, Greece. And the reason for that is because he knew that he didn't know. Where most of us think we know, but first of all, he knew that he didn't know. So here Krishna is actually sort of chastising, not sort of, but really chastising Arjuna and saying, you don't know anything. Because as long as one is proud of his so-called learning, Queen Kunti indicates this in one of her prayers, that Janmaishwarya Shrutasha Shribir. Shrutasha is one of the items which means learning. If one as long as proud of one's learning, one's not going to be able to hear. One has to unlearn first. Another example Prabhupada gave is that if you want to teach someone to play the piano and you find out that they have actually taught themselves before, then you probably will charge more for the teaching because you have to unteach them first because they taught themselves the wrong way without the proper teacher. I mean, sometimes they may teach themselves the right way in the piano playing, but spiritual life is a different thing. So first, people have to come to the point is that, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do. I don't really know what the absolute truth is. Please help me understand. Because when people come and they say, I already know, then how can you teach someone? If I go to a university, I take a mathematics class or something like that, and I say to the teacher, I already know this. I taught myself mathematics. And if I don't know, the teacher will send me back a few grades or something like that. So purport, The Lord at once took the position of teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, you are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what his body and what his soul does not lament at any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme is even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not oppose himself as a very learned man. And you find this quite often. The people are very much into, you know, religious rules and regulations. They don't know the purpose of all the religious rules and regulations. They just take the rules and regulations as the all in all. And you have to know, and this is something we discussed in the beginning, and particularly in regard to Grandfather Bhishma and Yudhisthira Maharaj, who are very attached to truthfulness, that you have to know what is the highest priority of injunction, because sometimes the lower priority injunctions can be neglected in order to practice on a higher level. For example, Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, and there is an injunction in the Vedic literature that sannyasis should not cross oceans. A sannyasi should not live with people who are eating meat or keeping meat in the refrigerator. And there's even injunctions that a sannyasi or anyone, or a spiritualist who looks at someone who is an abject materialist should immediately run to the Ganges and take a bath. shouldn't even take time to put a swimming suit on, or what they call in India, the Indian swimming suit, the gumsha. So there are injunctions like that. But these are secondary injunctions. The primary injunction, which Srila Prabhupada followed, was that Yari Dekatari Kar Krishna Upadesh Amargai Guru Hoi Tore Desh. Wherever you go, whatever you do, you should give people Krishna. That's much higher. Much, much higher. Like if someone is drowning, let's say someone is drowning, and you know how to swim, and you say, well, give me some time to go home and put my swimsuit on because I'm not supposed to go swimming with my regular clothes. You know, obviously, under normal circumstances, please don't go swimming with your suit, with your three-piece suit or anything like that. You know, put on your swimsuit. And under normal circumstances, you shouldn't go swimming when it's only 40 or 50 degrees out Fahrenheit, we're talking about right now, not centigrade. But under certain circumstances, then these injunctions don't have to be followed. So you know, there's many things like this. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not oppose himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. We talked about that, the bird in the cage example, which we gave the other day. One who knows this is actually learned. For him, there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body. And let's do this verse, and then we'll end for the day. Natvevaham jatunasham nacham neme janadipaha nachayvanabha vishyama sarvevayamatakparam na never to but na eva certainly aham I jatu at any time na did not asam exist na not twam you na not ime all these janadi adipaha kings na never cha also eva certainly na not Vavishyamaha shall exist, sarve vayam, all of us, ataparam, hereafter. Never was there a time, famous verse, when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Very important. We're eternal spirit souls. We didn't come to into existence. We're not going to go out of existence. We've always been there, but in different bodies. Purport. In the Vedas and the Katha Upanishad as well, in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the maintainer of innumerable living entities in terms of their different situations according to individual work and reaction of work. That Supreme Personality of God is also, by his plenary portions, alive in the heart of every living entity. Only Satan persons who can see within and without the same Supreme Lord can actually attain to perfect and eternal peace. Nitya nityanam chaitanas chaitanam eko bahunam yodhidati kamam tam atmastam yaye nupashanti diras tesham shanti shashvati netaresham. The same Vedic truth was given... let me translate that. Because Prabhupada doesn't translate it. There are many eternals... and there is one supreme eternal, and there's one many living entities, and the one supreme living entity. And that supreme living entity is maintaining all the plural living entities. And if one worships that supreme living entity, one can be happy and satisfied. The same Vedic truth given to Arjuna is given to all persons in the world who pose themselves as very learned, but factually have a poor fund of knowledge. The Lord clearly says that he himself, Arjuna, and all the kings who are assembled on the battlefield are eternally individual beings, and that the Lord is eternally the maintainer of the individual living entities, both in their condition and in their liberated situation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the supreme individual person, and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal associate, and all the kings assembled there are individual eternal persons. It is not that they did not exist as individuals in the past, and it is not that they will not remain eternal persons. Their individuality exists in the past, and their individuality will continue in the future without interruption. Therefore, there is no cause for lamentation for anyone. Of course, we forget from one lifetime to another, but we remain the same individual soul. The Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of Maya or illusion, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence is not supported herein by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Authority. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. Krishna clearly says herein that in the future also the individuality of the Lord and others, as is confirmed in the Upanishads, will continue eternally. This statement of Krishna's is authoritative because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. If an individuality were not a fact, then Krishna would not have stressed it so much, even for the future. The Mayavad may argue that the individuality spoken of by Krishna is not spiritual but material. Even accepting the argument that the individuality is material, then how can one distinguish Krishna's individuality? Krishna affirms his individuality in the past and confirms his individuality in the future also. He has confirmed his individuality in many ways, and impersonal Brahman has been declared to be subordinate to him. That's later on in the Gita. Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. Krishna has maintained spiritual individuality all along. If he is accepted as an ordinary conditioned soul and individual consciousness, then his Bhagavad Gita has no value as an authoritative scripture. A common man with all the four defects of human frailty is unable to teach that which is worth hearing. So the four defects, imperfect senses, we have a tendency to cheat, we have a tendency to be illusioned, and we make mistakes. And I think that applies to all of us who are not completely Krishna conscious. The Gita is above such literature. No mundane book compares with the Bhagavad Gita. When one accepts Krishna as an ordinary man, the Gita loses all importance. The Mayavadi argues that the plurality mentioned in this verse is conventional, refers to the body, but previous to this verse, such a bodily conception is already condemned. After condemning the bodily conception of the living entities, how is it possible Krishna to place a conventional proposition on the body again? Therefore, individuality is maintained on spiritual grounds and is thus confirmed by great acharyas like Sri Ramanuja and others. It is clearly mentioned in many places in the Gita that the spiritual individuality is understood by those who are devotees of the Lord. Those who are envious of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no bona fide access to this great literature. The non-devotee's approach to the teachings of the Gita is something like that of a bee licking on a bottle of honey, or a human being licking on a bottle of honey. You can't taste it. One cannot have a taste of honey unless one opens the bottle. Similarly, the mysticism of the Gita can be understood only by devotees and no one else can taste it, as stated in the fourth chapter of the book. Nor can the Gita be touched by persons who envy the very existence of the Lord. Therefore, the Mayavadi, Mayavadi basically means one who thinks that the Lord's body, individuality, and everything is illusion. That's what Mayavadi means. The Mayavadi explanation of the Gita is a most misleading presentation of the whole truth. Lord Chaitanya has forbidden us to read commentations made by the Mayavadis and warns that one who takes to such an understanding of the Mayavadi philosophy loses his power to understand the real mystery of the Gita. If individuality refers to the empirical universe, then there is no need of teaching by the Lord. The plurality of the individual soul of the Lord is an eternal fact, and this is confirmed by the Vedas as above mentioned. And we're going to end there. So in other words, we are individual souls. Krishna is an individual soul, and we remain there eternally. And if you don't accept that, why are you reading the Gita? Because that's exactly what the Gita teaches in many places. Okay, and the next verse is a very important verse, text 13, and we will do that verse tomorrow. Now, we're going to, I actually put everybody on a forced mute, but now we're going to allow people who want to ask questions to unmute themselves. Who has a question tonight?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Okay. Dibya. What's your question?
I was a little bit confused on text 10, where in Prabhupada's purport, he says that as friends, both of them were on the same level, but one of them voluntarily became a student of the other. And you gave a few examples of that. I was thinking about would Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Babaji, would that be an example?
No, they were never on that level of friends. He was always very respectful. Although, education-wise, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I can see where your question is coming from, that education-wise, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was much more highly educated than Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So from a material educational perspective, I guess you could make that particular point. But they were never friends. I mean, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was always highly respected as a bona fide guru by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In fact, he was ordered to accept Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj as his guru by his father, Bhaktivinod Thakur. Okay?
Thank you. I also have one other little thing I wanted to ask. Maybe you can clarify the when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, is there anyone in this particular Leela that knew of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan?
Certainly Krishna knew of his pastimes. Arjuna knew about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. I mean, he's calling Krishna Govinda.
Yeah.
Govinda is actually a Vrindavan name. So he certainly knew. I mean, I would assume Yudhisthira and the Pandavas knew about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And you find that in the Mahabharata, you actually find different characters. Even Duryodhana and his family, sometimes they, Dhritarashtra's family, they refer to Krishna as just that coward boy, you know. You know, and sometimes they'll say, oh, he just lifted some little hill. Govardhan Hill. So they actually knew, not everybody, but at least there's evidence that many people knew about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And, you know, they may have considered Krishna to have some mystic powers, because at that time there were many yogis around who could do perhaps magical things with their yogic powers, and they might have thought, you know, Krishna's just one of those. Or he's just a magician or something like that. I mean, they could justify that. I mean, even Duryodhana, he saw Krishna's universal form when Krishna came. I mentioned this the other day. When Krishna came to try to make peace between the Pandavas and Kauravas, Krishna exhibited his universal form. So there was indication that they had a hint, at least, and that's a big hint, that Krishna was God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But, you know, sometimes people are just so overwhelmed with greed and lust that they forget who they're dealing with. And, you know, certainly Arjuna had information before, because Arjuna had certainly witnessed a lot of Krishna's mystical yogeshwara, supremely mystical powers. But, you know, you forget by the either through lust or greed, or if you have an intimate relationship with Krishna, you actually forget that he's God. I mean, even devotees experience, you know, when we look at the deities, we think, oh, how beautiful Krishna is. I want to be part of Krishna's pastimes. And I forget, I mean, even someone like me, I forget that Krishna's God. I think many of us do. I mean, if you see how beautiful Krishna is and you think of him playing his flute and see him with Srimati Radharani, it's, sometimes it's hard to remember that Krishna is God, even though you know about Krishna's pastimes. I think many of us must have those experiences when we become so overwhelmed with at least Krishna's beauty and hearing about Krishna's pastimes, then he's just the most attractive person. All right, so who else has a question?
Dhanvat from Maharaj.
Oh, again, Abhishek. So,
yeah. So, Maharaj, I just have one question. In regards of Arjuna and Krishna's relationship, when before the battlefield they were friends, and when the time the Gita was spoken, Arjuna accepted him as a spiritual master. And but although he is also having one of the spiritual master known as Dronacharya, so is it a kind of offense whether Arjuna had did when he has already one existing guru, but still he accept Lord himself as a spiritual master?
Well, Dronacharya was basically his martial arts guru.
Okay.
He wasn't actually a spiritual guru, and Krishna didn't actually give Arjuna initiation. He was Siksha Guru. There was another guru that Arjuna had, I forget his name right now, maybe someone can remember. When the Pandavas had to go to the forest, they actually accepted a guru. So he was a martial arts guru. Like one can accept, guru can also mean teacher, or one can have many Siksha Gurus, and only one Diksha Guru. So he was like the Siksha Guru, instructing Arjuna in martial arts.
Yes.
All right?
All right. Yep.
So one other question. We have time for one other question. Then I want to make an announcement. Anyone else have a question? No? Okay. Going, gone. I guess Nalini Khan's not here right now. Too bad. So, here's an announcement. Tomorrow, of course, we're going to have the class the same time, same station on Bhagavad Gita. But tomorrow also, East Coast time, and those of you who are on my notification list on WhatsApp will have already received this. Tomorrow, East Coast time at 9 a.m. in the morning, which in India is 9.5 hours later, then we will be having a interview with the famous Gauramani, who is a famous singer. Some of you may know Gauramani. And so there'll be an interview with her at that time. So you can watch on Facebook or Zoom or on Gauramani's page. It's going to be simulcast in many different places and also available later on YouTube. So that's tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning, East Coast US time. You can figure out whatever your time is in Europe. In Europe it's 6 hours later, so it'll be good for Europe. It'll be a little late for the South Pacific area, pretty late for the South Pacific area. Then the next day, Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be putting a notice out about this on WhatsApp, 11 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to have discussions with a famous doctor in Germany about what to do to prevent the coronavirus, you know, what steps you can take to prevent the coronavirus, what steps you can take to build up your immune system so if you do get the coronavirus, the effects may be, will most likely be minimal. So this is, it's going to be a very interesting discussion, and it may require some dietary changes for some of you who are interested or attached to certain items of diet. Or anyway, you'll see. It's going to be very, very interesting. And on Sunday at, two things on Sunday. Sunday we're having our normal program at 5 o'clock East Coast time in the evening, afternoon. That's a normal Gita thing, which is the Sunday feast here. And also at midday, at 12 o'clock, midday, East Coast, U.S. time, which will be good for Europe. We will be having a discussion on empathic communication on the, I think it's the GBC Strategic Planning Facebook page, which will also be on my Facebook page, will also be on Zoom simultaneously. So we got a lot of things lined up over the next 2 or 3 days. Tomorrow, as I mentioned, tomorrow is a discussion with Gouramani. And Gouramani, being a very famous singer, and she has a spiritual master who's not so famous, which is me. And, you know, I just identify myself as Gouramani's guru. So, we'll be discussing, I don't know what you want to discuss, but it'll be like an interview type of thing. So all 3 days will be like interviews, plus we'll be having our normal Gita class in the evening, which you're all invited to participate in. So it should be quite an interesting 3 days and a lot of things for me to do here. So all right, thank you very much. We will end here. Thank you all for joining us, and we will hopefully see you all tomorrow for Gouramani's interview and for the evening Gita class. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.